I'll tell you what, Bill. Besides, it's nice to have Ellie in the audience. Because I just think to myself, well, I'm going to get off 41.
I told Eric we talked about that.
Congratulations.
For the sake of keeping us on time, I'll ask that we get started. Welcome to the Transportation Committee meeting. It is Monday, February 2nd, Groundhog Day. I feel like we've been here before. And it's the appointed hour, and the committee is here, full and present. The first thing on the agenda is the approval of the minutes from the January 5th, 2015 meeting.
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
And the ayes have it. And then we're going to have a presentation from Mr. William Hamilton regarding public transportation. Paul and I just got back from a CHATS meeting. We had lots of conversation about public transportation at the CHATS meeting. Brad was there as well. So, William, I'm going to turn it over to you if you're ready. Do you have a PowerPoint?
No, but we thought we'd show you the two things that make riding the bus so much better than it used to be. If you'd scroll up a little bit, Martin. This is bus traffic. Bus Tracker allows anyone to find out exactly when their bus is going to arrive at their stop. It's short on graphics and exciting online dancing goats and so forth, but if you're standing at a bus stop, this is pretty fabulous. This is the times that the number 40 bus will arrive traveling westbound. That means towards the city. This is the bus you would get on to go to Charleston from right out here on the road. And we can also show you the 41 right quick. Martina, you'll switch this to 41. The 41 also stops, and we'll put that on westbound as well. That'll be the third line. And this shows you how long you have to wait for the next 41 bus going. So you can scroll down a little bit, Martine. And the mapping actually shows you, or should show you, where the bus is. At the moment, it doesn't do that for this one. Let's go back to the 41 and the 40 and see if we can see the where the bus is on that one.
Yes, you have to
pick be westbound as
well.
Yeah,
you have to pick a direction.
The beautiful thing is that this works on your smartphone.
There's an app for that.
It's actually just a little web page. It looks enough like it. Well, it's out there somewhere. I don't know. I'd also like to show you very quickly how Google Transit works.
There it is.
There's our bus. And this will move as it's going. So if you're at one of these stops, which are these small blue boxes along the way here, you can see where the bus is, where you are, and you get an ETA. And that is, it removes an enormous obstacle to riding the bus. While I won't demonstrate all the complexities of it, if you wanted to plan a bus trip anywhere in Mount Pleasant or anywhere in our region, you would use Google Transit for that. It also works in 200 other cities. You can step out of your hotel in New York, Portland, Toronto, Paris, London, say where you want to go. The phone knows where you are. It will do all the planning for you. You never need to touch a bus schedule again. I was just here to tell the town about the progress we're making with transit. I think the important thing to understand is that the number of people riding transit in Mount Pleasant has tripled in the last 10 years. It's been roughly 10 years since June 2005 when Carter came back from the dead. We had over 16,000 people take a ride on the 40 bus. 16,000 separate rides were taken on the 40 bus in December. That's remarkable because December is a low utilization month due to the holidays and the weather. January won't be as good, and then it will start to climb up. The annual peaks are usually hit in April, May, and October. And in October, we set a historic peak for transit in Mount Pleasant, the highest ridership on transit in Mount Pleasant in known history. The question is, and this is everyone on the town and all should have this, we can scroll down some. We do a lot, while other parts of our region spend a lot of time obsessing about monorails and rail projects and expensive stuff, that's probably not in Mount Pleasant's future. We can stop scrolling down. What what we make our money on out here in transit is basic bus service and making basic bus service work. The thing we need to share with other people in the region is that no matter, even if we build the big rail transit project some people say we need, and I think we do need one, most of our region will still be using buses when that is over. And making bus service work is what Mount Pleasant has learned to do. One of the interesting things is we have a wonderful website, and I have a information card that I'll pass out shortly. But what do people come to our website for? And it's the same thing. Basic information on our routes. The most popular thing on our website over 2 months, 671 people looked at it, is the Mount Pleasant number 40 bus route, our largest bus route. Then the page you just looked at earlier, which is about how to use the internet and Bus Tracker and Google Transit to improve your ride. Then the 41 bus. The 41 bus, which runs down Coleman's, it's a much smaller bus route. It doesn't run as often. It carried a little over 3,000 people in December, which is not, it only runs 6 days a week and once every 70 minutes. But that's the second. And then, of course, an overview on our transit routes and Jingle Bus, which is something we did to promote the 41 bus. Interesting thing is the 41 bus showed a significant recovery. It had a very bad November, but in December when we went out and we did the Jingle Bus thing, we did all the community outreach. We did see that it recovered a great deal from being down from a year before to being up almost 500 from a year before. We do not know precisely what part of the outreach we do works here. We don't know if hanging stuff on people's door, on 250 doorknobs at Gregory Ferry Landing Apartments boosted the 40 in December, or it was something else. But we do know this for certain, based on 3 years of experience and talking to thousands upon thousands of people in Mount Pleasant. If you go out in your community and your mayor, your council, your community organizations, your schools, and your local transit group, make noise, talk to people, and distribute information, your ridership will go up faster than CARTA's general rise in ridership. So what we are doing overall is working. Obviously, the biggest involvement that the town has, what we're going to plan to do this spring is, of course, do outreach at the Arts Festival and the Blessing of the Fleet. We're going to try to get out and finish up this transit outreach that we've been doing in North Mount Pleasant. If anybody has a scout troop or a school group that wants to do a project for a couple of hours, I love transit, but it's hard to make hanging stuff on doorknobs exciting. But we know it works. We're also going to be, so we're going to try to do more of that. We're going to try to do an outreach effort on the eastern end of the number 41 route beyond Moultrie Plaza and Moultrie Middle School and try to get more people on the number 41 bus there. I'm sorry? Spoleto. And Spoleto. Every year we promote Spoleto. And one of the things we do is, and this is something we do right now, if anybody has a good connection to the local hotel, that's useful to know, is we go out and we talk to the hotels about getting their guests to ride our transit. This is a massive opportunity for our town. We collect taxes from every hotel room we book. It puts more people on our buses, which is critically important, but this CARTA decides who gets to keep their bus routes and how much bus route they get based on the number of people who ride. I know people think transit's a tree-hugging, touchy-feely, no standards thing, but in fact, the way CARTA does it, it is rigidly driven by numbers. If your buses are empty, and you aren't lucky enough to have Boeing paying for it like they do in North Charleston, your buses go away. That's where the bus that went to Sullivan's Island and the Isle of Palms went. Which brings us to the, so we'll be doing that in the next 2 weeks. The reason we go out now is because the hotels are empty now, and they're hungry now, and the money's going out, and no money's coming in, and people are sitting in their offices going, what can I tell somebody I'm going to do this week to fill up rooms? That's when they're ready to listen. If you go in April when they're busy, they don't care. We do the same sort of thing with Spoleto Sans Auto every year, encourage people to stay in Mount Pleasant, which means they have their restaurant meals in Mount Pleasant, they pay for a hotel room in Mount Pleasant, sales taxes go to Mount Pleasant, and then to ride the bus downtown, which works very well for us. Mayor Riley is somewhat less enthusiastic about it. The last issue is the beach bus. We know that Isle of Palms and Sullivan's Island are considering doing some sort of transit to the beach again, which is needed. It's really cool that a mother or a father works 6 days a week at a menial job in our region and has no way to take their children to the Beach Health Center. And that's something that we really should fix. There's obviously a lot of angst and a lot of issues about what they're doing out at the beaches with their parking and transit, but our concern is really that the locations it connects on the main include a place where they can connect to our primary bus lines. We can scroll down some. The biggest involvement the town has with this is helping us get new bus shelters out. And the impact of the two new shelters at Mount Pleasant's Town Center and the noise the town helped make about it really did have an impact on how transit was perceived. I went out and talked to 100 businesses around Town Center and handed out transit information after the bus shelters went up but before the little ceremony. And the way people thought about buses compared to our previous trips had been transformed. They knew there were shelters. They knew there were nice, comfortable, safe places to wait. It really did change how people perceived the system. As long as we have people standing in the rain by leaning signs in the weeds, we're never going to get our transit where we need it to be. And at the moment, our transit system largely helps people who don't have cars. A lot of them live with family that have cars, and they're KISS riders. What happens is their family takes them to a bus stop and leaves them, and they ride a bus into town. I'm one of those people myself. And the problem is if it's ugly or nasty or scary or unpleasant, if it's raining and it's cold and it's windy, a person is not going to leave their family member there to ride the bus. They're going to do what we do for people we love. They're going to keep them in their car. They're going to drive all the way down our roads, 5 to 10 miles, take them where they need to go, adding to our traffic. And then better than that, they're going to ride 5 to 10 miles back again. So one bus trip may not save us one car trip. It may save us two very frequently. And so having places like Town Center where family can go and leaving a family member to ride into the city comfortably really does seem to have a big impact. The question is, where do we need more shelters? We know that we have two that the developers committed to providing at Patriots Point near the Edgewater or Bridgeview development, whatever it's called. And those should be well positioned not only to assist them, but the College of Charleston's athletic facility. And we do go down to the College of Charleston periodically and talk to them about riding the bus. The question is what other places need one. We know that the Greg Tracks developers obligated to provide one, and the Greg Track is not a bad place to have a bus shelter because while we have two wonderful shelters across the highway there, it is a very scary road to cross on foot. So having a shelter on that side of the road, somewhere between Mathis Ferry and Town Center, would be valuable. I think it would be probably most valuable if it was at the corner of Mathis Ferry Road and Highway 17, but in front of the Greg Track would also work. The walk isn't that bad. Gregory Ferry Landing is supposed to be getting a Sunoco gas station, but I'm told this project's been around for a long time. If they do, a bus stop there would allow anyone coming down 41 to drop their family off to ride into the city. And that would be a moneymaker for that gas station because they would get customers from the people riding the bus and from people dropping off and picking up their families. Most gas stations don't even make money off of gas. It's all about the little store selling snacks and water and ice and that sort of thing. And this would be a traffic builder for them. Wando High School has a beautiful new building out front. We had hoped when that was put in that having a real shelter out at Wando wouldn't be an issue. Unfortunately, due to the way they had to set up the security fence around the school, a kid has to walk 10 minutes through the back of the building and through the entrance and by the guard shack to get to the road. So eventually, we do need a shelter at Wando High School. But at this point, right now, we do have a bench out there. We have a rather disappointing bus stop across from Mount Pleasant Town Hall in Houston Northcutt that I know the town's struggling to put up a shelter at. It is the busiest bus stop at Mount Pleasant without any cover right now. But if we can't do something about it immediately, we need to at least have Public Works put some gravel in the pits that are developing in front of the benches as people stomp their feet. That'll prevent those from being mud holes, and it will prevent further, bigger holes that eventually cause the concrete benches to fall over. Where else might it be useful to have a bus stop on 17? We have a little wooden bench now by on Six Mile Road by Echo. It gets a lot of use, but there are a lot of people waiting there, and a shelter would be good to have there. Apparently, near the entrance to Brickyard, there are a lot of people who live on the opposite side of the highway that are riding into the city and crossing the highway near the entrance to Brickyard, and that's a busy place as well. And I know the town's looking at shelters on Coleman Boulevard. We have, however, while I'm giving you this huge laundry list of things we need to get done, you need to understand that a tremendous amount has been achieved. 3 years ago, with the exception of those concrete benches I just complained about on Houston North Dyke, there wasn't a single place to wait for a bus without standing up on the entire number 40 bus ramp. We now have 2 shelters and 7 benches out there. So we have a stop nearly every mile. There's also a bench and a place you can wait indoors at Mount Pleasant Hospital. So we have made a lot of progress, and I have no doubt that the increasing quality of these stops is contributing to the success of our bus routes. I believe if we can sustain our current level of progress on the number 40 route, which is currently at 13 riders per hour, that we should be able to get to the 20 rider per hour target within about 2 years. The number 41 bus, it depends on how the route stop improvements impact it and getting that community to engage on making its bus work better. Any bus that runs once every 70 minutes is an edgy proposition. Adding service to the route would be a wonderful thing, but it is not free or cheap. But I do think that eventually the number 41 bus will work as well. Anybody that knows ways we can get into apartment complexes or community groups in anywhere along these bus routes to talk to them, get them to distribute literature, we know it works. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
I have a question. I have a question back here. You mentioned during Spillane downtown.
Yes, ma'am.
Does this kind of schedule once it's downtown Charleston in any way conflict or overlap or duplicate the shuttle service that's downtown? Because when I go downtown, I usually try to get the visitor's center, I get a page pass, and use the shuttle to go downtown.
Our buses stop at the visitor's center parking garage, which is on the opposite side.
Is there duplication?
No, our buses stop right next to where the dash buses connect. You just get off our bus right across from the entrance to the music barn, walk one block south to the southern end of the visitor center, and that's the main hub stop for the dashes. So the beautiful thing is you live in Mount Pleasant. You can park for free at any shopping center along either of these bus routes. Ride the bus into the city for $1.75, and then go all over the city on dash, without fighting parking, without spending any money on parking downtown, and without having to move your car over and over again, and then you ride the dash right back up to the visitor center and come right back to Mount Pleasant.
Thank you, William. We appreciate all your time and effort on this. The Hungry Next Drive Hungers have been a great advocate for us here at Transit, and we here have the Vice Chairman of CARTA on this committee, and we have worked hard to support and promote transit. We will continue to do that. The College of Charleston number is $600 per semester for a student to park a car in a parking garage downtown. And the statistic I was told is 20% of the students that attend the College of Charleston live in the town of Mount Pleasant. So obviously there's lots of improvements for transit. And we will continue to talk about those. And again, thank you, Wayne.
They may have never told you, but your College of Charleston student can ride these buses for free with their student IDs. When they're telling you they have to have a car and they have to have a parking pass, they're not telling you everything you need to know.
But they can't use a skateboard once they get to town, so they have to take a bike. Yes, sir, Mr. O'Neill.
I'll offer up 2 comments, a little beyond William's presentation. Number one, a thing that's not commonly understood, we talked about Wanda High School. Federal law and our transit funds, they prohibit us to transport school children on public transit buses. So that comes up a lot. Why don't we look at combining the bus service with CARTA school bus system? Federal law prohibits it. It's a prohibition on our transit funds. Second of all, Mr. Marshall will be excited about this, and there'll be a lot of information to come. Our grant came down from the FTA for senior center mobility. So we'll have 2 bus routes that will run in Mount Pleasant, pick up seniors and take them to the senior center. and other things. So we've got the money now. We've got the local match. We're going to buy the buses, and we'll put them in service. So, finally happened.
Well, it'll be good if those can connect to one of our bus stops. And, you know, people always talk about that, let's put the school kids on Carter. At that hour of the day, most of Carter's buses are full, including the number 40, which runs standing room only sometimes in the mornings. Now, the idea that these buses are empty, that's just not true anymore.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that. Any other comments from the committee? Moving right along.
Yes, you can. Each bus can accommodate two bicycles, so you can get off, hop on your bike, and get around town on your bike.
Absolutely. The item number three is the discussions with stakeholders regarding the intersection of Live Oak Drive and Coleman Boulevard. And to give you a little bit of background on this, I met, I suppose, a week before last at this point with some of the stakeholders who had some, they were of the opinion that there was a promise to keep Live Oak open for left turn access on from the northbound on Coleman. We should have diagrams so I can show you that. And I believe there was also some, the former mayor had also made some promises about that roadway. So we met to try to give them the information of where we were with the project and what decisions were made. Paul was at that meeting. Brad wasn't available, but I'll turn it over to you, Brad, to show you what we have, and then we can open it up for discussion.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm just going to, just like I think we did on the last issue with regard to the Coleman design, go over the history of how we've gotten to where we are today. I think that'll be informative. What you see here is really the design at that intersection. I think it's probably easier to see. We go to this, which is a larger graphic of the corridor between Lucas and Mill Street. And during the initial public meeting in 2012, about 3 years ago, we showed this location, which is Live Oak and Coleman.
Is there any way you could stay on the other side?
Jason, if you can't see better, if you want to stand up, you're welcome to also kind of stand up.
So that was closed. as a result of public meeting input, we had two public meetings in 2012. One of the considerations was to consider opening that back up. And one of the primary considerations was that we received comment on was the inability of tractor trailers that were currently servicing businesses on Hadrill Street, Shrimp Docks, not that being really their only primary access into the old village, or to Hadrill Street, I should say, at that point. So at the public hearing, we actually showed it. We didn't show any changes to the graphic. We noted at the public hearing that we would discuss with the DOT additional access. And as we've evolved through design, what essentially occurred is there's a couple things that affected the design. One was there had to be what we call a special exception to their design standards, because this current geometry doesn't meet the current design standards for super elevation, meaning how we tilt the road. And one of the mitigating factors for that, that they would consider an exception to the design standard, was the access management element, which we proposed all along Coleman Boulevard. And so we've ended up with a design that essentially only lets left turns in the westbound direction towards to get over to Hadrill Street, and it doesn't in the other direction. And that's essentially almost the way it's designed today. You can do it. I don't advise it. Most people, it's kind of a precarious left turn. But that's how we've gotten to that design. And the other consideration, of course, was the fact that in the other direction, we do have a left turn lane into Lucas Street. And this distance at this location does not allow for the standard turn lane design for a left turn. So all those things being considered, that's how we've gotten to the current design today.
So for clarification, you have a stack lane, so to speak, if you're traversing Coleman, that's you get to make that turn. And how long is that approximately? I mean, you can get out of the lane of traffic.
Correct. It's a standard turn lane design, so it probably has 150 feet of storage and a taper.
Okay, so if you're moving along and you want to turn onto Haverhill, you can actually get out of the roadway and stay in that until you can make your turn across traffic. And on the other way, because of the distance to the light, I mean, this is the DOT design, correct?
Yes, this is predicated upon all the design standards that we have to meet.
They're stating that it's open, the median is open, so it wasn't closed, just for point of clarification, but there's really no way to, there's not enough width in there to have that 150 foot of stacking because it's the closest to the proximity to the light.
Yes, ma'am. There's not enough length of this location.
Let me go through it first.
Okay.
And there is in this direction, and currently there's a median that comes all the way up to Live Oak at this point. It's not closed.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a median that comes up to that point, so you basically have to get beyond the median and then pull over very quickly to get out of the through lane.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to open it up to the committee first for questions or clarification, if you have any. Okay.
Not yet.
All right, that's fine. I'll open it up for comments from the audience. Ms. Tankersley?
I'd like to suggest that we need turns for both directions, not only for Pages Oakley Grill, but from office building, Live Oak Center, on Live Oak, for ease of access. Because, for example, if you're coming from downtown Charleston, you want to go come down at Pages, you can't turn left on Coleman heading east or north, whichever way you want to look at it. But coming from Charleston, you can't turn left if that median is put in place. And you know how fickle the public is. If something's not easy to do, they're not going to make an extra effort to do it. They will go somewhere else. And I think that their business will suffer if that median is placed across Live Oak. I don't know how my tenants in my building will accommodate it. I'll tell them to go down to Lucas and turn left or turn at Mill Street and circle around. But the thing I was going to suggest is, can I walk up there in front of that thing?
Yes, ma'am, absolutely. Okay. And please state your name at some point and address for the record.
My name is Evelyn Cranbrook.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Cranbrook.
I'm Anita Tankersley. And do you need my address?
Yes, ma'am.
1297 Waterfront Drive in Mount Pleasant, 29464-9494. And here's Pages of the Grill right here.
Oh. That's okay. It's it doesn't to everybody, not to you.
Did I think that not touching it?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's supposed to be smart, but it's really not.
Well, it works right well with me. Pages Oakley Grill is in this triangular intersection on the corner here. And this median is the triangle where it branches off the building street. There, I did it again.
Okay.
Clifton Street, the traffic light there. Then you've got this triangle or island here, got this little jut out piece and everything. And I remember Mr. Likens, our town engineer, stating that we needed stack space. And how many feet was that you need to have a stack lane in order? But I was going to suggest in five pages that we go enough back so that it doesn't get right up to an intersection. Stop that median. Do not put it here because of the gentleman that's in the blue house at Louis and Tan. I don't know who the owner is now.
Pages, Oakley Grill.
Oh, you've got it. Okay, you just piece it to the gentleman. Okay. Need some curb cuts there. That's going to be a hardship on them if that median's there. I would say just stop the median here. Eliminate it all the way down to the traffic light where people bear right to go down Wilden because it's too much clutter. And when this is completed, there's going to be even more clutter. There's going to be traffic increase. And again, Mr. Likens commented on the 22nd of January when we had that meeting that the traffic studies, he said there were only three people on the turn left off Coleman on the Live Oak. And I asked him when that study was taken. He was using figures from 2011 to illustrate why they made that study. Am I mistaken about that?
No, ma'am, you're correct. That was the information we were given.
Yeah, and we 2011. Also... Well, you know, the town has grown a bit since 2011. And I commented yesterday that using 2011 traffic studies to make a decision something for today is no more pertinent than if you took an old 8-track recorder or tape and try to make it work on a CD player. You can't do that. You've got to be current with the studies. And I'm getting dry mouth. I'm going to clam up. Actually, though, eliminate the median all the way down to the traffic light. I didn't touch it that time. But down to the traffic light, and then pick it up again across Shem Creek, past Mill Street. So that way it just eases all this congestion. You've got the Presbyterian Church, you've got the old village people. They don't want all this backup and everything. But by eliminating the median there, you would have room, adequate room, for the stack. Anyway, I think you get the point. There's
yes,
no
ma'am.
Point to me repeating all of the reasons.
Ms. Tankersley, if I could interject really quick, just I'm talking about the same thing you are.
Don't touch this thing
up here. I'll just touch it. So we were talking about the design restrictions. So my question is, you know, the information was from 2011, and we are much, much busier in this area than we were in 2011. You know, you stand outside for 5 minutes and you see 10 cars turn. It's an unsafe turn as it is now, okay? There's a ton of people already turning through there. My question is, because of the design, the landscaping, you know, the landscaped median, is that the reason why we can't have a proper turn lane with the 150-foot stack? Because we're still trying to maintain this landscape, so there will be no landscaping there?
No, there's a restricted median there now, and it's not the reason you cannot design a standardized left turn lane in proximity to the existing signal into LIGO. That's the reason. That's one reason that we don't have it there. The other primary reason I want to emphasize is a design exception that we had to get. If you think about it this way, if something doesn't meet the current design standard on super elevation, I mean, how do we tilt the road for the speed of the road to make sure people don't fly off the road? Well, what we've had to done is raise up this entire side of this road, and we would have started affecting all of these properties along here in a pretty severe manner because you have to build an embankment up to do that. So what we showed was through access management and the safety benefit that you get, which is generally about a 25% reduction in crashes along the corridor, that we don't need to have that super elevation. And that's what is linked to the special exception, is the implementation of the restricted median for its safety benefits.
Okay, real quick. If you eliminate that turn in Live Oak, and people are forced to turn on the Lucas to get to Page's Oak Grill, to get to Ms. Tankersley Shops, to get to Foxworth, we're serving about 1,200 people a day, okay? And that's on a slow day. My point to you all is, if there's beach traffic or 5 o'clock traffic, Coleman Boulevard is jammed up. You got people trying to get into that turn lane to turn on Lucas. Well, that turn lane's going to fill up, and then they're going to just wait with their blinker on. Coleman Boulevard will be even more backed up. So we're going to create traffic problems. And then you've got 18-wheelers turning left onto Lucas with cars on side streets. You have them turning left at that stoplight by Moultrie. You have the kids coming out of school. You know, you guys are all about safety. People are going to get impatient. They're going to start going around people. There's going to be more accidents. There's going to be destruction of citizen property. I just strongly, strongly urge you guys to just take a look, whatever needs to be done. And I understand that, you know, a lot of money was spent. There's designs made. But there needs to be two turns to alleviate some of this traffic. I mean, right in the middle of peak hours, y'all been on Coleman Boulevard at 3:30, 4 o'clock, and it's jammed up right through that turn. I mean, heaven forbid the Ben Sawyer, you know, goes up and beach traffic, and you're backed up all the way to the bridge. So I just, you know, what is our recourse? I mean, this is already done. It's going through. I mean,
it's not on the ground yet.
Could you do me a favor as well, Brad? Can you go farther up and show me how long the stack lane is to Lucas and how that works. Is it also 150 feet?
That's what's shown here. I mean, here's pages right here. Here's the turn lane that you see here with the restricted median. So here's the one turning this way. Here's the one turning this way. Like I say, it's probably, I don't have it, 150-foot storage with a standard taper of 180 feet. So they're probably nearly 300 feet long from the time you start to taper until you turn.
And the traffic studies, as we review those, is it standard? I mean, how many years out is typical for us to use for data?
Well, anytime you start developing a project, you immediately grab the data at that point. That's when we start developing the project, 2011.
Well, wouldn't you think that the growth of Mount Pleasant's experience would be like an exception?
We project that.
That would be an exception.
And we project that out for the intersections, and then we do our level of service analysis for that to determine if the facilities we're designing are going to have adequate levels of service.
Mr. Morrison, how much does that median cost per 10-foot increment?
I don't know that number. I'll be happy to provide that for you.
It's not going to be free. The taxpayers are going to have to pay for it. The money's going to have to come from somewhere. Even if it's a 100% grant from the federal government, that money comes down, trickle down from our pocket. Why not save the money, make everybody happy? Y'all have your turn lane, you have your tilting road, and have a safer highway. Just clean that stuff up, like I said, until past Mill Street. Pick it up again. You know, if you want a pre-medium with landscape and everything, but save that money that's going to create not only a hardship on my tenants, it's going to create a definite catastrophic hardship on Pages Open Real, Mrs. Fox, Mr. and Mrs. Foxworth back there. And I have 8 units in my building. It's either offices, professionals, or retail. And every one of them, I didn't even mention all this to them because I don't want to get on my back about it when I can't do anything until I can make y'all understand. Do you understand what I was talking about up there, eliminating the thing altogether and picking it up farther down the road?
I did.
You understand?
I understand what you're proposing, yes.
Yeah, all right. If you were either the Page family or me, well, that building is my primary livelihood. I had that building 4 years, totally empty. I pay about $25,000 a year property tax on that. In 4 years of that building being totally empty from 2008 to 2012, I had to juggle some hooks in my house to make myself able to hold on to my property. And now this comes along. If you were sitting in my chair at my desk at home, what decision would you make?
Mayor, what would you like us to do?
Thank you for that, Eric. They brought it before this committee so that we could discuss this. And I offered at the meeting that I didn't have a solution for these business owners. Eric, I offered at our meeting that I didn't have an immediate solution for these business owners. We know there's not enough space, and it's not a landscape median. It's not a matter of money, Anita. It's just the median at that point. It's a divider.
Is it serving any real, definitive, necessary purpose other than somebody just wants it?
No, in this location, it is providing safety due to the proximity of that traffic light. I'm not a traffic engineer. Don't pretend to be a traffic engineer.
I understand.
Had a lot of those conversations.
But I just wondered what the purpose of it, because I can see the whole situation becoming moot, simplified, everybody happy. Just eliminate that thing, like I said, in front of Pages at the Grill. Don't pick it up again until you get past Jeffrey Bridge and Mill Street.
I get that, Anita, and that's not a challenge that I can take. The challenge that I feel here, there's one challenge that I was willing to discuss, and I said I could take it to my committee.
Yeah.
This committee can decide where to take it from here. The only challenge I have, obviously, is Pages Oak Grill didn't open until 2011. So obviously the data that was provided is different today. Now,